This is the Veterinary Life Coach Podcast with Dr. Julie Capel, episode number 279. Hi, veterinary friends. Before we get into this interview podcast, I would like to thank you for being here. Thank you for listening, and thank you for all your support. I love the fact that you're giving me positive feedback, you're signing up for free coaching, and you're getting on my email list, my Wednesday weekly words. So if you haven't done any of that yet, I ask you to please do those things. You can go to my website, theveterinarylifecoach.com or juliecapel.com, and sign up for any of those things. If you go on Amazon, you can find my book, Love Your Veterinary Life. And if you do like the book, please leave me a 5-star review. That would help me so much. And if you enjoy these podcasts and you want to hear more, please give me a 5-star review on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to this podcast, because the more positive feedback I have, the more veterinary friends will get to listen to this information and all the wonderful guests that I have. This community of veterinarians is so important to me, and I love it so much. And I want to help as many veterinarians and people that work in this profession as possible. And the more we spread the word, the more we can do that. So if you have any suggestions for the podcast, if you want to be a guest, you can go to my website and send me a message there or send me an email at jacapeldvm@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Okay, let's get into this interview. I think you're going to like it. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Veterinary Life Coach Podcast. If it's your first time listening to the podcast, welcome. This is the podcast where we talk about loving vet med, working on self-development, and better mental health. Today, I have a wonderful and exciting guest for you. Her name is Dr. Beata Weermiller, and she's a medical doctor specializing in obstetrics and gynecology in Troy, Michigan, and has over 29 years of experience in the medical field. She graduated from Michigan State University in 1994, and she is also the founder of a dog rescue organization, which is why she's here, called District 5 Animal Alliance Detroit. And I'm super delighted to have her on the podcast today. Welcome, welcome, Beata. I'm so happy to have you here.
Well, thank you, Dr. Julie. I am very happy to be here as well. It's my first time on a podcast. And of course, I'm delighted that this is about veterinary medicine and about animals, because that's, you know, my love and my passion. So thank you so much.
Yeah, when I met you, you were like so excited to hear I was a vet. And you were like, okay, I have this dog rescue and all the things, right?
Right. I feel like I'm becoming a veterinarian a little bit.
But yeah, you probably are.
So far removed from what I know in the human medical field, but
yeah, it's a little different, but kind of similar, because we deal with a lot of people too, right?
Yes, right, exactly.
So I always ask every new guest on the podcast to tell me their veterinary story. So can you tell me your physician story and how you became a physician, and then how you got into the dog business?
Sure. So not to make it too long, I was actually an immigrant. I immigrated with my family from Poland in 1980 and lived with my grandma in Hamtramck, where a lot of the Polish people live. I have very hardworking parents. They both worked two jobs, and we were not rich. We were not poor, but we were just kind of hanging in there financially. And I've always, you know, my parents always told me, just, you're here, this is such a wonderful opportunity, this country. You really need to make the best of it. And I never forgot it. So I'm like, I don't want to work two jobs. I don't want to work as hard as my parents. So I just kind of moved on. I went to school. I went to high school. I became valedictorian. I got a free scholarship to Wayne State University.
Nice.
And that's where I became, like, I really loved science. So there was a teacher named Mrs. Mosheri, and we had anatomy class, and she basically said, you know what, you are really good at this, you should become a doctor. And I was like, okay. So basically, I don't have like some story about having cancer or childhood cancer and me wanting to be that. I literally she said, I think you would be really good at this. So I continued and I went to college and medical school, and I met my husband in medical school. We got married in residency in Indianapolis, and then we have three children. They're now ages 26, 23, and 20 in 2 days.
Nice.
And I love my career. I love OBGYN because when I was in medical school, I just love taking care of people. It's a happy field. There's lots to do. You can do surgery. You can not do surgery. You deliver babies. So that's what I loved about OBGYN. And obviously, women, I was drawn more to women than men. I did some urology rotations I wasn't in love with because it's just doing prostate exams and a bunch of dudes. So that's what I loved about it. I loved that it had a lot of opportunities and you can do a lot. So we moved back to Michigan because of family, and I started at Providence Hospital. I was there over a year, and then I joined private practice in Troy, and I've been there ever since.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so I've been at our Troy office for a long time, probably 20 some years. And as I've gotten older and my kids gotten older, you know, we always had animals. We've always had rescues. There was an article in a magazine or in the newspaper, Detroit News, about Detroit Animal Care having these dog ventures where people can come in and take a dog for a walk for the day, give them a respite from the shelter. And I thought that was fascinating. So I dragged my son and his friend who did not want to go. They're like, we're doing what? I'm like, we're taking a shelter dog out for the day.
For a walk.
And we did that. And I went back to the shelter and I saw so many dogs with no homes. And it just like completely spoke to me. And I'm like, you know what? I'm one of those people, when I do something, it's like over the top, which is not always a good thing. Like when I'm in, I'm all in and then some. I said, I'm just not going to walk dogs. I want to start my own dog rescue.
Nice.
And that's how it started. So we started very small in like 2019, 2020. Our first year, we rescued 7 dogs. Our second year, 49 dogs. Our third year, 211 dogs.
What?
And there's really only 4 or 5 of us core people in the rescue. And so here we are. We're almost at 70 dogs this year. 90% of them are from the Detroit Animal Care and Control Shelter. They are dogs that are just, the shelter is very overpopulated. Like, our heart breaks for all these dogs. So we do mostly the shelter dogs.
So do you take the ones that are just overflowing, or the ones that are destined to be euthanized, or how do you decide which dogs to take, or certain breeds? Like, do you have a criteria?
Majority of the dogs there happen to be pity mixes. That's majority of our dogs.
Yeah.
We do take the ones where the volunteers' favorites, or they need out, or people know that a rescue needs to take them, because the only way you can adopt them out of the shelter there is they have to be spayed or neutered. They have to be, which is good because people don't want to take them and breed them again.
Right.
But rescues, they don't have to be because they know we will spay and neuter them. So a lot of the times, if the shelter's overflowing, the ones that we should be taking are the ones that are not spayed or neutered. But
okay. We
do try to take the harder dogs. We don't take easy dogs, but we know that their only way out is us. So
yeah, so the older ones or the ones that are sick, or
yes,
how did you run into behavior problems? Because that would always be my concern.
Yes, well, you know what? Interestingly enough, for as many dogs as we have rescued, I only did one behavioral euthanasia on a dog, which could not basically live with other animals or was at risk to be a animal that's going to hurt another animal. So we had a big evaluation with a behavioral vet, a dog trainer.
Mm-hmm.
And she agreed with us and we did a behavioral euthanasia, but that breaks your heart. It really does.
It does, but sometimes it's necessary, right?
Because
that dog can't be placed without some kind of danger. And then, you know, you don't want to just them bouncing around from home to home because they're getting in trouble all the time.
Well, that plus, do you really feel that safe? You're going to put them in a home or somewhere 7-foot privacy fence. Really, this dog is never going to leave. No one, no other animal will ever see this dog. It's just, it's not realistic.
No, it isn't at all.
So, but surprisingly, we, the dogs are absolutely amazing, I must say. Some of them do have some health issues. We put one down last week because he was like super old. Someone dumped him. He started having seizures. Poor guy. And you know, we're not going to spend $12,000 evaluating for seizures when a dog is super old, can't see, can't hear, you know.
Right, right. You have to be practical, especially in this situation.
Yeah.
So what was the biggest challenge when you decided to start this? Because it was kind of on a whim, right? You said, oh, I'm going to start a rescue.
Yeah.
So how did that all evolve?
Right. I did not know what I was getting myself into. It is a full time and then some job. You cannot, the faces of the dogs that you know you could save, but you don't have a foster for. So the biggest challenge is obviously financial, because it's very expensive to vet these dogs and make sure they're, you know, good to go. Financial and then fosters, because we don't have a facility, but we are looking for a sanctuary. But the fosters, right? These are people who need to understand what fostering is all about and the proper way to decompress a dog, the proper way to introduce them if they have a dog or family members. That is the biggest challenge. People want to help and they say they want to help, but the amount of people that actually help is very little.
And how did you learn all that? Because you had no experience with this, right? You had your own pets,
Right.
But you didn't have any experience with dogs.
No, but there's a lot of people at the shelter that you meet that are like volunteers. So a lot of those people became my board members. I met them through other rescues.
Okay.
It's a small community. It's like the vet community is small, you know, the doctor community can be small, but I think rescues are also the same. We all know each other. And then people jump from rescue to rescue, or they hear about you at the shelter. So it's amazing how many people you meet. I think when you meet people as passionate as you are about what you're doing, you can get a lot accomplished without a lot of drama.
Yeah, the rest is easy, right? And it's a nonprofit, correct?
Yeah, it's a nonprofit.
Yeah. So did you have any challenges setting it up?
No, I had another rescue that I knew. They helped me with the paperwork. I set it all up. A woman I work out with, Sarah, she actually made us a website. I started the Venmo, PayPal accounts. We started a Facebook account. We started slowly, you know, collecting money, donations. And now we're like raising money pretty much daily. But we have a lot of events. This weekend we're having a trivia event for our rescue. So that'll be fun.
Do you have somebody that plans that, or are you doing that too?
Well, we're doing that too. So I found the venue and yeah, like I told you, that's one of those things, like when I'm in, I'm all in, and that's kind of to a fault, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I will not give up on an animal. I will not give up on a person. If I'm telling you I'm going to be somewhere at a certain time, I am going to be there. If I'm going to tell you I'm bringing a dog to you, I'm bringing a dog to you. So all the flaky people have long since gone.
You have to be determined if you're going to
be determined. And I know you do a wellness podcast because I listened to a lot of your little podcasts before we did this today. And I do have to tell you that your mental health, your physical health has a lot to do with what you do in life, what your passions are, with how your relationships are with people. So I'm also big on exercise and getting oxygen flowing to my brain and making sure that, you know, things are okay in my head and in my body. But I think that's a huge, huge deal.
Yeah. Well, tell me how you personally navigate all that, because you're a full-time physician.
Yes.
You just did a surgery this morning.
Yes.
You texted me and said, I'm out of surgery. I'm ready. So you just got out of surgery. Now you're on the podcast with me. You've got the rescue group running. You've got an event tomorrow. Like, how do you personally juggle all that and stay mentally healthy?
I think because what I do in my life, I'm so passionate about things that I do. So I choose to do those things.
Okay,
and
yeah.
They
It's
make
a mindset.
Me happy. Yeah, they make me happy. No one made me start a dog rescue. No one pulled me in there. You know, I wanted to do it, so I'm doing that as well. I also have a few rental houses I run on my own and with a partner, business partner. So there's a little bit of everything.
And you
But
enjoy
there's a
that.
lot of people. I enjoy that. And there's a lot of people behind me, right? I have a very supportive husband. I have great kids. I have a lot of wonderful friends, my rescue friends, my friends from when I was young. I have a really, really good group of people in my
Yeah.
life.
And that makes a huge difference, doesn't it? That connection and that support system.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when you have passion, it isn't a lot like work.
Yes.
It's more
Yes,
fun.
you love it. It's you feel it in your heart. You really
Yeah.
do.
And you still do after all these years of being a doctor.
Yes, love
Yeah.
it.
I
You
love
know,
that.
people that you've known for so long, or I saw a young gal the other day and she's like, "You've been seeing me since I was 15." And now she's married with a child. You know, it's very sweet.
Yes. Yeah. When you get
Yeah.
to know people over the years, that was one of my favorite things about veterinary medicine is knowing these people, you know, before they were married, and then they get married and they get their first dog
Yeah.
and their second dog, and then
Yeah.
they have kids and then their kids grow up. It's really rewarding to know people for that long.
Yes. And of course, I also feel like as you go through your journey in life, I have like these two things, life lessons that I try to give my kids or people I
Okay,
meet.
yeah, let's hear those. I love life
There's
lessons.
no, I forgot my number three, but my number one is life is about relationships. And I truly believe that. The second one is don't burn any bridges. You really shouldn't. Even if your experience wasn't exactly positive or something tragic happened, try not to dwell on it and make a lot of people angry and leave like you haven't resolved the conflict.
Yeah. So how do
You
you
know?
recommend that someone does that? Like, what is your key to conflict resolution?
Well, and it's kind of funny because I really don't like conflict, so I avoid conflict a lot. So maybe that's
Maybe that's part
here.
of it.
I try, I don't even know how to say it. I am not a drama person. I don't like drama. I don't create drama. I don't create conflict. I don't try to get into heated conversations with people because I feel like that's just fuels people. And but if something doesn't go right, you know what? Sometimes it's better just, you know, if you get like a really nasty email, which I've gotten recently, you know what? I didn't respond because I feel like that's okay. That's your opinion. You're entitled to your opinion, whatever you feel. But I don't want to go back and rehash things or give them my opinion and tell them why I think they're wrong and I'm right. And I feel like sometimes, you know what? A good work partner of mine, Mark Ohm, always said to me, he always says, let it go. It's like that song in Frozen. He goes,
Let
Beata,
it go.
let it go. Because I can be very hot-headed too. I can get very angry and run around and cause havoc. But he just tells me, let it go. You got to pick your battles. Every little battle is not worth it. It creates chaos in your head. You know what? Let it go.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's so true. I think you're right. There are some emails or some reviews online or whatever that just don't demand a response. Because
Right.
there's nothing you can say or do to fix it. And so
Right.
then why get in that back and forth?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's hard to let it go, but I think sometimes letting things go like that is just better. Just move on, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it gets stuck in your head and it's hard to let go because it hurts your feelings or, you know, you don't agree and it's unjust and you want to fight
Yes.
back. But sometimes
Right.
if you can just see the other person for what they're going through, and I say that a lot. Other people are angry for something that they're thinking. It doesn't really have
Yes.
anything to do with you.
Right. I think that's the one thing you got to understand about people. And that is hard. I think that comes with age and wisdom. I don't believe young people are good at this. These people that whatever conflict they have or whatever's wrong with them, they're projecting it onto you, but you may have absolutely zero to do with it. And that is the hardest thing because you want to take everything in so personally and the way they're talking at you. And you know, this happens at work at my OBGYN job, right? People are just so angry and so like miserable, and you just want to know why or why, but you're becoming like their scapegoat. You're becoming like the person that they will yell at, bark at, whatever they're doing. But then you realize that, you know what? It has nothing to do with me. It has zero to do with me. But that's hard to take, especially if it happens over and over and over, which thankfully doesn't. But but it's also hard to know where these people come from, right? People, but you can't read people's minds. You don't know. I mean, you don't know someone's relative died. You don't know if someone had something terrible happen in their life. You don't know them that well. So for them to assume that, oh, well, you didn't know this, or you didn't, you know, well, how am I supposed to know this? You didn't share that with me.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and that's sympathetic, right, to what you know, correct?
Right, right. Just have some empathy and try to always think the best of people. Like I try to always assume that they're hurting in some way, and they're hurting me because they're hurting it. There's something that John Maxwell says in his books. He's a leadership guy, and he says hurting people hurt people. Yes. And so I always try to remember that if someone's hurting me, it's because they're hurting. And that gives me the ability to be more compassionate.
Yes.
And just let it flow in one ear and out the other, because I'm like, it's not about me. It's about whatever's hurting them right now. And they're just trying to give that hurt to me, and I don't have to accept it.
But me personally, I don't go after people like that.
Yeah. Well, there's no reason to, right?
Right. So I wish people would be more, also be more, you know, conscious of what they're saying, or because what you're saying to other people, whether it has anything to do with them or not, is, you know, they internalize it. That doesn't make them feel good.
Right. Absolutely doesn't.
I think so, if you can see,
go ahead.
Oh, just one thing, you know, like, you know, living your life with, like, say hello to people, you know what? Walk by the hospital, say hi to this cleaning lady that's, you know, hauling. Just because they're cleaning people doesn't mean you can't say hello, or, you know, you've got some ego about you, which I try not to. I try to be very down to earth. Yeah. I think, you know, connecting with people on all levels is the way it should be.
Yeah. And that's probably held true with your rescue group. It's a whole different experience dealing with the shelters and the rescue dogs, fosters.
Yes.
You know, it's a different kind of challenge. Have you had any really big challenges that you almost couldn't get over in getting this rescue going? Or was there something that you learned a big lesson from doing this?
Yeah, I mean, a few things. Like, for example, we took in a bunch of dogs, and then none of those dogs fit in the homes they were in. And I have no place for them to go, so I couldn't sleep for like a week. Like, trying to pick my brain, like, where am I going to take this dog? Where is this dog? It drives you literally insane. But that probably is, this is why we need a place. I can't do this anymore, you know?
Yeah.
If something doesn't work out, where are you going to put that dog? You know,
you're thinking of actually building a building. Is that what you want to do?
No, more like finding some property north of Detroit with like a house, and then have someone live there, and then maybe building some kennels, getting, you got to have enough land to be able to get your, you know, shelter license and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. So it's more like keeping the rescue dogs in a, like a sanctuary facility until you can adopt them out.
So doing that, probably half and half, half foster homes and half the sanctuary. Those are the dogs that are going to be like the returns, or the dogs that are the foster can't keep them or whatever, or they're going out of town. Probably half and half.
Yeah. What's your success rate at adopting them out once they're in a foster home? Is that pretty good?
Really good. Some dogs take a long, long time. You know, we probably get at least 40% what we call foster failures, right? People that take them out of foster, but then they fail.
Yeah.
Meaning they adopt them, so.
Yeah, which
really,
is good.
Really good.
40%, that's a lot.
Yeah, so our recent dog got adopted, Clue. He was with us out of the shelter. If you count him being in the shelter system, he was 612 days.
Wow, that's a long time.
But he got adopted, thank God.
Isn't that funny how that happens? I used to rescue mostly cats at my hospital. We had a couple dogs, but mostly cats we would rescue. And some of them lived with us for, I think the longest one probably lived with us for several years, 2 or 3
Wow.
years.
Yeah.
And then the right people came along and, you know, because nobody wanted her. And then finally they were like, we want that cat. And it's amazing. It's like, hallelujah, we finally got rid of this cat. But, you know, some of them do take a long time.
Especially our dogs. You know, we have the Detroit specials from Detroit, the pitties, you know. Whenever we have a non-pitty, they go fast. Pitties tend to not go so fast.
Yeah.
But that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah. Well, that's why you're doing it.
Yeah.
So tell me about veterinarians. What has been your experience with them? What do you think about them? What can you say about them?
So overall, I mean, our experience has been very positive. We've been lucky because there is a few clinics that welcomed us with open arms, and we have rescue accounts. Sometimes it is difficult because when we take the dogs out of the shelter, sometimes they have no vetting, and just a simple, you know, appointment for, you know, shots and all that is still a lot of money. So there's really not a streamline to this. We try to go to a place called All About Animals to get a lot of our shots initially. These spay and neuter appointments take a long, long time to get. And for example, All About Animals is, you know, they're like the cheapest in town, but they're booked out 6-7 months. You can't even get
Oh,
an appointment.
wow. Yeah, that's way too long for a spay or neuter, right?
Yeah. Like I said before, we have dogs that come out of the shelter with kennel cough, but, you know, no one wants to give us some doxycycline. So we're like stealing doxycycline from other dogs we had, giving it
Oh,
to these
wow.
people. You know,
That's difficult.
You become very resourceful as a rescue.
I bet.
But, you know, thankfully, if we do take Detroit Animal Care dogs, if they've been there long enough, they are spayed, neutered, heartworm tested, microchipped, got all their vaccines. So it's just hard. We had a dog last night that was picked up from a cardboard box. So he has no vetting. So we're taking him to All About Animals today or tomorrow, getting his initial shots, trying to call a vet, see if they can get a neuter or spay appointment. I think it's just a lot of money. And foxes are everywhere.
Money is a big challenge for vet med, right? Because we don't have the insurance that human medicine has.
Right.
So, you know, the people that practice vet med aren't paid enough. The technicians aren't paid enough. And the hospitals, you know, cost a lot to run because of all the things you have to buy and the drug prices and things like that. So I think that if the rescue people and the veterinarians could figure out how to solve that money problem, that would probably be a big deal, because when you know, you're asking vets to discount their services and their drugs and their fees, and, you know, then that money has to come from somewhere. And that's I think the difficult thing that I've found with rescue. You know, I spent a lot of my own money over the years rescuing,
same
and
for me.
them and taking them home, which I was fine to do, but that's the challenge, right? You can't expect everybody to want to do that.
I wish there were more programs, honestly, where the grads, and I know there are those programs where the grads graduate from vet schools, they go to like an underserved area, right? Like Humane Society or something.
Yes.
And then get their loans forgiven or partly paid for. There's not enough with, I don't even know if there's enough veterinarians.
Well, right now it's tough. Right now the market for hiring veterinarians is much higher than the actual, you know, number. So a lot of vets coming out of school right now get multiple offers because they're in such high demand, which is good for the doctors, but it's not good for the pet owning public, because then they have a hard time getting appointments, like you said.
Yeah, hard time getting appointments. I also think that the best way it would work is maybe if the rescues were able to, you know, but then you have to have a lot of money where you have your own little building, and then you can contract with like a retired vet to come and maybe do some work. But we've tried to tap into these retired vets that I've known, except Dr. Julie, of course. But
we haven't
we've
talked about
tried
that
in the
yet.
past, and they're not interested. They don't want, I mean, they're just they're like, I don't want to come in and make $300 and vet your dog. Like, you know,
Yeah.
there's
I
a lot
think
of
that's challenging
burnout
because
as
a
a,
lot of them,
you
yeah, a
know.
lot of them have burned out and they don't want to work anymore, or there's just a lot to it. There's insurance issues and, you know,
Yeah.
board complaint issues. Like what I see as one of our biggest problems right now in vet med is the fact that all the veterinarians are afraid of getting either sued or
Oh, geez.
Board complaints. And I'm sure as a
Well,
OBGYN, you guys experience a lot of that.
yeah.
You have really high medical insurance.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a malpractice insurance. Is that an issue?
Well, I mean, we do pay it. You gotta pay it because you
Yeah.
just don't know. I think some of our insurances have like tails. Like, you know, they can sue you until the child is 18 years old for
Oh, wow, really?
birth trauma. You know,
Yeah.
I mean, it's some of it is so ridiculous. It's not
Yeah.
even funny, but you know, you
Yeah.
gotta have it. You gotta protect the public, right? There's malpractice in every profession. So,
Right. Absolutely.
I don't know. How do you fix the vet problem? I actually looked into going as a medical doctor to veterinary medicine.
You're going to go get your DVM degree?
Well, here's the thing. For example, our biggest problems with even getting these dogs off the streets and not having so many dogs is the spay and neutering, right?
Right.
When you're so behind and there's nowhere to get these people in, they're just not spaying and neutering their dogs. So for that reason, there's a lot more dogs than there should be.
Right.
So maybe there's a way that Michigan State University can do some sort of a program where a medical doctor can get some training to be able to do basic surgery with like a veterinary technician, or, you know, I don't know if that's even possible, but why, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder too if you could team up with like a university. I know when I went to veterinary school, we used to actually spay and neuter shelter dogs, and
Yes.
because of PETA and all of that uproar, it became something that they didn't do anymore. And now I think most veterinarians that are going through veterinary school have to get spay and neuter practice by going to like shelters and things like that. There are programs where they do low cost spay and neuter, and the vet students or the new veterinarians can get experience that way. So I wonder
I
if you could
just,
come up with that kind
right.
of program.
I just don't know why, like, the Michigan State students can't go to the Detroit Animal Care Shelter or Humane Society and do their work there. Like, why do we have to drive dogs 2 hours to Michigan? Because at one point they had, like, problems with a veterinarian. I think she was off on leave. They were driving dogs to MSU, but it makes no sense. You bring a few people in, couple days a week, you can spay 30, 40 dogs easily.
Right. Yeah. Well, maybe that's something that you can kind of work on is talking to the uni. Have you ever talked to anyone at the university about that?
No, that's
I don't
on
know.
my
If there's
bucket.
probably a lot of red tape, right?
I don't see, I mean, they have facilities at the shelter for
Yeah.
surgery. That's where they do all the neuter and spaying.
Right.
You can even do more if they could get some veterinary students to help, or
Yeah, that's a great idea.
you know,
Well,
it's
we'll
a
have
good
to
idea.
brainstorm about that for sure.
Yeah. Yep.
So tell me what your hope is for the future of this rescue organization, or if there's anything. I mean, it sounds like you want to get some land and get some kind of shelter going or a sanctuary.
Right. I would love to have a facility where we would could get a vet in there to help us get dogs spayed,
Yeah.
neutered. I would love to have a day where there's no dogs to pull out of the shelter, where I go down there and there's three to choose from, not 180 dogs to choose
Oh my
from.
gosh. How many times a week do you do that? Do you pull dogs
Well,
out?
it varies on how many fosters we have, and it averages, you know, it's hard to say. Sometimes we'll get 3 weeks, sometimes we have none. It just depends. We took a dog out, I think, last week. Super cute guy. It just all depends on how many fosters and how many get adopted, and it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
You know, we're
Well,
small, we're not famous, we don't have a big social media presence. And the money, you know, the money, it's just like a sieve, like it just goes right through, right?
Yeah. Well, first of all, tell me if there's anything that we didn't talk about that you think we should before we start to wrap up. And then I'm going to have you tell us about the rescue and where we can donate money and where we can contact if we want to help.
Yeah.
And that.
So I think we've touched on a lot of things. I mean, I'm just trying to like keep with the vibe of the podcast about the wellness and veterinary life and everything. I mean, I think vets are wonderful. I think it's an extremely hard profession. I do give you guys a lot of credit. I don't euthanize humans like you euthanize animals.
Yeah,
and
that,
the whole
that's
insurance
something
part.
That's different, right?
Right. And the whole insurance part, right? Like so many people come in, like they want discounts. They want this. No, I don't want this. Put my dog down. Give it away. I mean, I think it's really tough. I think that's why there's such a high burnout. I mean, I give you guys a lot of credit, but we also are so grateful because without veterinarians, what would I be doing with these animals?
Right. You can do a hysterectomy on a person, but you can't do it on a dog, right?
Cannot. I wouldn't even know how to intubate. I wouldn't even know how they do that. So,
right.
So, you know, we're very grateful. And then we're grateful that we have vets that have welcomed our rescue into their clinics and doing things for us. And it's wonderful. I think the biggest take is just we all should be working together. We all should support each other. And, you know, as far as D5, yeah, we would like to get.
Yeah, tell me how people can get a hold of the information, where they can donate. Tell me all of that.
So we are District 5 Animal Alliance Detroit. We have a website. We're actually going through some major changes on our website. D5AnimalDetroit.com is our email. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. We're foster-based. We're out of Detroit. We love what we do, and we want to save more animals. So if you can spread the word, we would love it.
Yeah, so any financial support, any if you know anybody that wants to do spays and neuters or has a facility
Yes.
that they can help, anything,
Yes.
anything that we can do to help the rest.
Teladoc would be awesome. Like they do Teladoc at what you call it, All About Animals, but you have to be a patient there. So I
Oh,
don't know
okay.
How that works.
Telemedicine. Yeah, I know some people that are working really hard to get that going more.
I mean, a rescue Teladoc would be amazing. You can show them a tail, an ear. Something that you know the dog doesn't necessarily have to be driven somewhere for, because our fosters are everywhere, right? I have fosters
Yes.
within, I have fosters up north, way up north Michigan. So that in itself would be amazing. If you could go a telemedicine visit for a few bucks and say, can you send me some doxycycline or something easy, you know, instead of.
What to do with a wound or, you know,
Yeah.
that thing.
Yeah.
I love that. That's
great. Yeah. That would
Okay,
be amazing.
So it's, let me read it again. District 5 Animal Alliance Detroit. Yeah.
Yep.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else we want to say before we wrap this up?
Stay healthy. Take care of yourself. Number one.
Yeah. Self-care, right?
Self-care. You got to do it. And you got to be happy. You got to find happiness.
Do something that you're passionate about like you are.
Yes. Yes. I should have picked something maybe like opera singing or something.
It would have been easier, right, than rescuing dogs.
Yes.
All right. I really appreciate you being here. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
We're going to
Thank
keep in
you
touch
so much.
So I can maybe
Yes.
Hook you up with some people that I know in Michigan to try to help out.
Thank you.
And I love what you're doing.
Thank you.
I'm happy that you're so passionate about it. And I was delighted to meet you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Dr. Julie.
Yeah. Nice. This is Dr. Beata. Is that how you say it?
Wire Miller.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love
Thank
it.
Thank you.
I
All
love
right.
It. All right. Have a beautiful week, everyone. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Goodbye. Bye-bye.